Welcome to the Canon Convos podcast, where we speak to Australia's most inspiring photographers and videographers to find out what makes them tick. I'm your host, Jared Seng, and today I'll be talking with performing arts photographer Daniel Bowd about shooting what you love, the importance of sharing knowledge with your community, and how creativity helped him move forward during life in lockdown. Dan has been an inspiration of mine for a long time, so I hope you enjoy this chat as much as I did. Thanks for joining us, Dan.
Pleasure to be here, Jared.
How's it going where you are? I believe you are in Bondi?
I am. I'm in my attic office in Bondi. It's a beautiful day here in Sydney today. First day of, where are we? Spring? Yeah.
Now, I mean, it's hard to keep track what year we're in right now. I mean, actually, no, it does feel like we're definitely in 2020. It feels like that has dragged on for a while. Well, thank you for joining us on this podcast. I always love chatting with you, and I think we always get some great insights out of it.
Yeah.
You've been shooting with Canon for a while.
Mm-hmm. I have.
Do you want to take me through kind of your Canon journey and what gear you've been using over the years? Yeah. Up until the kind of gear you're using now.
Mm-hmm. I listened to one of your previous ones with Matt van der Putte, and he reminded me of the Canon IXUS V, which was my first digital camera, which was fairly revolutionary at the time. It was a little pocket point and shoot camera. I think I was about 20 years old. I'd saved up all my money from my part-time job and bought this camera, which kind of changed everything for me. You could fit it in your pocket, but it was actually a really pretty good quality camera. And I just started documenting the hell out of my life and all my friends and taking it out wherever we went. And it was sort of long before mobile phones had decent cameras in them. So it was me kind of doing that everyday photography with that camera first. And then after several years of that, I decided to take it a bit more seriously and upgrade it to the Canon 350D, which was my first SLR camera. And I remember I bought that actually the day I landed in Austin, Texas for South by Southwest Festival. And I literally bought it the day I arrived there. And then the next day I talked my way into photographing Kings of Leon. They were performing in Austin, and talked my way into getting a photo pass for that show and using the 350D with the 50mm 1.8.
I did not realize that's, after all these years, I didn't realize that was your origin story as well, which is strikingly similar to mine.
About blagging your way into a photo pass.
Yeah, pretty much. Why were you at South by Southwest? Was it there? Were you there to shoot it?
This is my previous life before being a photographer. I was a web designer, web developer, and South by Southwest is not just a music conference; it's an interactive conference as well. So, I was actually there for my day job, which was in web development, and it was sort of like an extracurricular activity was the photography and music. I was there for work for the interactive side, but I tacked on the music and photography for fun. And in hindsight, it kind of changed everything, because after that trip, I ended up with a pretty great portfolio of all these up and coming bands, and ended up getting published in some publications. Even though, like I said, I literally landed and bought an SLR for that trip. So, yeah, it was the start of
not a bad first gallery in your portfolio, Kings of Leon.
Yeah, I mean, at that time they were kind of just still playing little clubs, but it helps the fact that they went on to be pretty massive.
And then how did you transition from, you know, just having that portfolio, that music portfolio that was just kind of there for fun or as a hobby? Mm-hmm. When did that turn into a serious, you know, consideration for a career? Was it a gradual process? Was there a specific point where you thought, oh, wow, you know, actually this could be something I'd do for a job.
It was not ever a plan. It was all just a happy accident. I did it just for fun. I had this day job being a web designer, but at night and on weekends, I'd take my camera to shows and parties and mainly just document for fun, and then started getting little commissions from street press in Sydney. And I also made myself a little website, you know, back in the days of blogs. And I knew, because I was a web designer, I knew how to, you know, present photos and publish photos. This is showing my age. This is long before Instagram, it was before even Facebook, like, but there was like blogger.com and things like that to publish blogs. And yeah, and so I just did that for fun. And it kind of became my full-time job after I got offered a job by Time Out Sydney magazine, which was starting in Sydney in, goodness knows, it's over 10 years ago now. That was like where I was able to make the transition to leave behind the day job and take photography full time.
Was that a pretty scary step? I imagine it's riddled with uncertainty. I mean, for me, it definitely was. I mean, you get to the point where you think, okay, it's kind of possible to turn this into the full time gig, but only if things go really well.
Yeah, I guess I had the good fortune that I was offered this. It was at the time it was a full-time position. So that took away some of the scariness, because I was like, at least I know I can pay my rent. To take the job, I did take a pay cut of about 20 grand over what I was getting paid in my other job. But it was a leap of investment in better fulfillment in life. I was getting paid less, but I remember I just felt infinitely better that I was doing something that I was really passionate about, and I felt like I was learning every day. And that was very fulfilling. And although that position didn't stay full-time for very long, it set me on a really good path of I learned an incredible amount diving into a full-time photography position. And then when I did go freelance, I was a better photographer, and I'd also started to make contacts in the industry through the day job.
So what kind of shoots are you working on now?
Well, as I started, we've talked about before, in music photography, I still love and shoot quite a bit of music, but I've kind of transitioned into more other types of performing arts. So at the moment I'm doing lots of arts organisations. I work for the Opera House a lot. In the past few years, I've become really interested in dance and been doing lots of photography with dance companies and also theatre companies. And I find the most fulfilling these days.
And I guess there's quite a bit of similarity between shooting music and shooting dance. I'm sure there's a lot that's different, but what do you think is the most important skill, photography skill, to have when shooting performance?
You're right. I think all the skills I learned after, you know, over 10 years of photographing rock and roll concerts and whatnot, they definitely transitioned into shooting dance. It's a lot about anticipation of moments and then knowing when the apex of that moment is happening. You know, it could be a lead singer belting out a song, or a guitarist, you know, throwing his arms up in the air, playing a song. It's the same with dance. It's kind of anticipating that leap through the air and getting it at its absolute apex. And kind of taking what is experienced by everyone else as this sort of like moving, fast-paced thing, and just distilling it into a single frame. Mm. So there is a lot of similarities in both forms.
And I suppose as well, just not having a huge amount of control over what's going to happen. I mean, that's all in the hands of the performer. And it's your job to kind of, like you said, anticipate and put yourself in the best position and get yourself ready for that thing to happen without knowing exactly what will happen.
Yeah, that's very true in those things. You can't, if you're doing photographing a performance, you can't ask them to do it again. Like you either get it or you don't. But I have, I do both types of photography now. I do direct my own shoots. I started with it with musicians, shooting musicians, press pictures, portraits of them. And also I do quite a bit of photography with all sorts of people now and have to direct it, which is a whole another skill set altogether.
What kind of gear is in your bag now? Say you've got a performance to shoot, you can only take a backpack. Mm-hmm. I mean, both with music and any kind of performance photography, I'm sure you're the same. You want to kind of minimize the amount of gear you're taking around, especially when you have to move around a lot, dodge other photographers and crowds and everything. And yeah, so you really have to work out, distill your gear down to what the most effective, you know, two or three lenses are to bring. Yeah. What goes in your bag?
I've got a wheelie bag, which is my go-to bag. It's got two bodies. It's got a Canon 1DX Mark II. It's got a Canon 5D4. I have a 24-70 2.8. I've got a 70-200 2.8. I've got my 50mm 1.2. I've got 16-35mm. I've got quite a bit in this one bag. I've got my speed light. I've got card readers, laptop. And that about covers it. That's my go. That'll pretty much cover everything.
Mm. But what if, let's say you've got to run into a sweaty photo pit, and you can only take like a little sling or a small backpack?
Well, often I don't shoot as many festivals as I used to. But what I do now is leave the bag in an office somewhere, and then just sling the 1D with the 24-70 on one body, and then I put the 70-200 on my 5D on the other shoulder. So I've got two cameras and two lenses, and that's pretty much serves me for everything.
Mm. So speaking of music photography, I've told this story several times, so I know you're probably bored of it, but I feel like it's worth going over again in case anybody hasn't heard me talk about how I first found your work. And it was very similar to how you were speaking about blagging your way into a festival. I did the same thing. I was more in journalism. This is back in university days. Good 10 or 11 years ago now. But I was at a festival. I had accreditation to report on it, and when I was applying for that accreditation, there was a checkbox that said, "Do you need a photography pit pass as well? Do you have a photographer working with your publication?" And I just ticked it. I said, "Whatever. Like, I've always wanted to. I don't know how, but let's just see what happens." And they'll probably know. They'll probably, you know, look me up and realize why does he need a? Let's not waste a pass on him. But as I know now, they don't really check those things. They sent me the pass. Suddenly, I needed to find a camera, so I borrowed my friends. I'm pretty sure it was also a 350D or maybe a 400D, somewhere in that range. Took a 50mm. I bought a 50mm, so I ended up like owning a 50mm lens 1.8 without a body. But and I needed to learn QuickSmart what to do. I had zero idea. So Googled concert photography 101, something like that. An article popped up, a blog post from you, and it was very informative, very straight to the point, told me exactly the kind of things I should be looking out for and the kind of settings that would be helpful. And that's what I went in. I was only armed with that and my friend's camera, and off I went. And I guess it's similar with you and Kings Leon. My first ever music photos were Jason Mraz, John Butler, Paul Kelly. So it was a great lineup.
I love that story, Jared. That makes me so happy to know that that was helpful for you.
Yeah. I've spoken to other people about this as well, and several of my friends, music photographer friends, have said that they stumbled upon your blog post
amazing
as well.
SEO ranking that article. You're right. It was like the number one result, I think, if you search for concept photography tips or whatever.
That's pretty amazing. And I think, as you were saying, that's kind of early days. We're talking 10 years ago thing where it probably wasn't as common for people to be sharing knowledge like that so freely. I mean, now with YouTube and you can learn anything on YouTube now, but
that's right.
There was not many resources back then. No. So, that was really helpful. And have you received a lot of feedback like that from other photographers?
I that article at the time, like you found, really did get a lot of traffic, and people did find it useful. And there is a generation of people kind of like yourself who did find that and found it helpful. I kind of, as I focused more on my photography career, I found less time to actually write those sorts of resources. I still love talking about photography and happy to share any knowledge, but I just haven't found the time to properly invest in, you know, putting it down. And I'm not really kind of comfortable on camera, so like being a YouTuber and that sort of thing is not really for me. But yeah, I do love sharing that sort of knowledge.
It must be I don't know if satisfying is the right word, but it must feel good to know that you've helped a lot of photographers on their journey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's brilliant. I'm really proud of that.
Do you find that an important thing in your career is to kind of guide and mentor younger photographers? Because I know that you work a lot with photographers of varying levels with your agency and
I have a photography booking agency, and I really enjoy the process of finding new talented photographers and hopefully offering them paid work and, you know, advancing their careers. I also do I've been the official photographer for Laneway Festival for many years, and every year I get to assemble a team across Australia to photograph all the different Laneway festivals across Australia. And that's a really rewarding thing as well, finding great talented photographers in each city, which I'm often not aware of. So I have to kind of ask my networks of photographers, like, who's like real amazing photographer in Fremantle or whatever. I think you shot the festival with me one year, I remember. And I really love that. Getting teams of amazing concert photographers and working together to document a show like that really well.
I think a sense of mentoring others and sharing knowledge, I think that's a common quality I find in most of the photographers that I admire. You know, it's not just about the incredible photos that you can take. It's also about, you know, how open you are with other people, and I just think it's great. I think it's really important, especially now that we are so connected in so many more ways than ever, that people are, you know, open with their networks and helping each other along and not being totally closed off entity, which is also fine, but to me that's a very attractive quality, and it makes me it just makes me admire a photographer better when they're willing to share the love.
Yeah, and I receive it as well. Like, I love listening to, you know, various photography podcasts and things like that, and I've learned a lot from it. There's photographers I follow on Instagram because they post great behind the scenes of their photo shoots and that sort of thing. And it's incredibly valuable learning tool. And I still am learning all the time. And I think that's the beautiful thing about photography is we're like continually learning. You never master photography. It's, you just keep striving to get better and better. You never finish that process.
Mm. Speaking on that, I've wanted to ask you what excites you about a photo shoot now, because you've been involved in hundreds, thousands. I don't know. I'm sure it's been a lot. Yeah. What excites you about photo shoot now? Are there still technical challenges that you like overcoming, or is it more, or is that part of it kind of sorted now? You know what you're doing, and is it more about bringing like an unusual concept to life? What makes something stand out?
Yeah, photography for me is twofold. It's executing incredible photo, but it's also getting to meet interesting people. I just get really excited about meeting new talented people. And even though I might not be only in their presence for 5 minutes, taking someone's picture is an incredibly intimate experience. And you really quickly connect with someone when you are taking their picture, because they do have to be quite open and vulnerable with you to take their photo. So I just enjoy that moment of human connection when I'm taking someone's picture. But then, of course, there is the secondary thing that after that connection, I do want to have a photographic memento that I'm really proud of. So I never want to take just a stock standard, passport photo style photo. I want to execute something that's creative and ideally emotive about that person. I go into it with two things, just wanting to meet cool people and then come away with a beautiful memento of it as well.
I love the way you put that, because it's similar for me in that the actual photography part of it, every now and then something, a shoot requires a technical challenge or something that I haven't done before and it's tough, but then achieving it feels really good.
Yeah.
So there is some part of it that is about the technical process, but by large, the satisfaction I get out of my job is meeting people and traveling. Mm. I've always said that the camera is kind of like my ticket to the world and to meeting all these people. There's no way I would have traveled to most of the places I have or met most of the people I have if it wasn't for the camera. Mm. And it's not that I wake up thinking about shutter speeds and and apertures and getting really excited about clicking buttons. It's about who I'm going to meet, because I'm
100%
okay at clicking buttons.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the last time that we spoke was a good couple months ago. Mm. For our Canon web stream, and that it was, I mean, it seems like really a long time ago. I mean, the world is changing so fast right now.
Yeah,
but I mean, that was kind of in the beginnings of lockdowns and pandemic, and everybody was trying to figure out what we were going to do, what this meant for our jobs and for the future. And I think it was a pretty uncertain time for both of us, but you spoke about, just not knowing what was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
How have things been since then?
Yeah. I mean, when it all kicked off in March, April, I was essentially completely unemployed, probably like most freelance photographers. I had zero work, nothing in the calendar, no idea what was coming next. Two kids to feed, a mortgage to pay. And it's a pretty alarming situation to find yourself in, especially after, many years of building up a business and everything, and it all ticking along quite nicely. Thankfully, in the last month, I feels like the last month, it's finally started to take an upswing again, and my diary is starting to fill up, and my clients are booking me again. Just this week, I've been photographing some performances for live streams without audiences in, but this weekend I'm actually photographing a live performance by the Australian Chamber Orchestra. So that's a really exciting step that there are people starting to perform live again for audiences. But I've also been shooting a lot of dance. I keep getting employed by dance schools and done some stills for the Sydney Dance Company. And of course, Sydney Opera House is like my angel client who keeps employing me for all sorts of various things. So I'm quite lucky to have certain clients that have stuck by me through the pandemic.
I think that's a great case for shooting what you love. And then the work will follow, hopefully.
It's funny, on that point, while I had no work, I remember saying to my wife, who's also a photographer, I want to do another like personal shoot with a dancer and sort of creative project. And she's like, maybe you should focus on something else that's a bit more commercially viable. and she meant well, like I understand that. But since that conversation, I just keep getting jobs with dance, like these paid jobs with dance companies and dance schools and things like that. And I think it does show that if you are passionate about something, paying clients recognize that and do want to pay you for that.
It's great to hear you say that, because I've been having conversations with other photographers recently who also totally hone in on their passion projects and subsequently find work in those areas, because I know I am somewhat guilty myself of forgetting to shoot things that I just want to, and that I'd do without any commercial reason. It's a hard balance to achieve. I think as freelancers, you are always worried about how long the work will last and how long people will keep wanting you to do things. So when the work offers come in and they are all great jobs, but it might not be exactly what you would do if it wasn't a job, you end up taking them, because you think, well, who knows how long this will last? These are great offers. I'm just going to take it. And then it gets to the end of the year and you think, I haven't really shot anything for myself. The only time I've picked up the camera is to make money, essentially.
I've been there, so, for sure.
I get stuck in that kind of cycle. But then I talk to other photographers. For example, Bella Kotak is an amazing fashion and portrait photographer over in the UK. And I asked her what the breakdown was of, you know, personal versus commission work. And it was completely the inverse of my breakdown. She said maybe 80% of the time she's shooting something because she wants to. But because of that, because she is so highly skilled and passionate about that, that 20% of the time that she's shooting commissioned is enough to sustain a full-time career, because it's like perfect jobs that are exactly what she wants to be doing anyway. She's recognized for being a premium photographer in that area.
That is the dream. So to get paid for your precise personal style.
Exactly, for exactly what
and,
you would
and
do
also
anyway.
Get paid a premium. Like it's no good if you're an 20% of the work is paid and it's paid, you know, mediocre. That 20% needs to be paid at a high premium, which you hope it would be if you are like expert in your
field.
You
would hope so, but but there's definitely a larger element of risk associated with that way. But I love that some people are able to achieve that.
I'm not there yet, Jared. I still do plenty of jobs for the money.
So tell me about the project you've been working on recently with the Sydney Opera House.
As I mentioned, the Opera House is one of my like angel clients who have continued to employ me through the pandemic. And they're also, luckily, I guess, an arts organisation that has secure government funding that they can continue to do projects. So they've been doing some digital live streams, which I've been photographing. But kind of more excitingly, they commissioned me to shoot a series of pictures about the Opera House at rest. The Opera House has never been closed since it opened 47 years ago, and they recognised that it's a fairly unique moment in history, and they wanted a photographic record of that. So they commissioned me to shoot a few sessions, just basically dream gig. Just they said, wander around and take pictures, see what happens. And I just got to wander around the empty Opera House, no audiences, no performers, and just photograph the empty building. And, you know, there's still quite a bit happening there. There's cleaners and there's maintenance staff and there's quite a bit of construction going on in the concert hall. And that was a beautiful opportunity. But I also found it's a beautiful building, but what makes the Opera House so magic is, as a performing arts venue, is when it's having shows. So I missed having artists in there. I missed having a subject to photograph in this beautiful space. So I kind of asked if I could evolve the brief and bring in some dancers that I knew from my other work. So I invited a dancer from the Australian Ballet, and then on a separate day I invited a dancer from Bangarra to come in and be photographed inside the building. And I wanted, this was again me wanting to try and capture something more of an emotional connection with the subject. Those dancers are both exceptional dancers who can execute the most unbelievable dance moves, but I wanted them to use their bodies to tell a story about what we were all going through at the time, which was this frustration and confusion and sadness around not being able to work and not being able to perform and having their entire year of performances cancelled, and me similarly not being able to work to photograph those shows and to work with them. And so it was really fun for us to collaborate on a project where we kind of used their bodies and my photos to explore those feelings with the beautiful background of Sydney Opera House.
I imagine there was some degree of comfort in sharing that kind of experience with other artists who are, you know, and across different mediums who are going through this same thing with us, you know?
We're going through exactly the same thing because they're dancers. Their entire year is performing shows, being in rehearsal, working with their fellow dancers. They're literally stuck at home doing Zoom classes for, like, they're not even allowed to touch other dancers. And so they're probably suffering even worse because their normal work is so physical and so collaborative. So I think we were both just so excited to work on a creative project in the same space together and do what we love. And so it was mutually fulfilling for all of us.
It's quite a beautiful way to express your feelings through photography and art and dance, as opposed to talking about the exact same thing over and over again with with everybody you meet about what's going on, how are you coping, blah, blah, blah. But to be able to kind of explore and go through those emotions through art, what a like refreshing way to just...
It was like, and we talked about this early on in the pandemic. I was like, mate, I've got no time for creative projects. I've got no time for self-improvement. and so it was also really nice to get to that point. I think it was probably after schools went back that I was like, oh, I finally got some headspace to do something. It felt really nice to focus on something personal because I'm on most before pre-pandemic, I'm not very good at doing personal work. I am focused on, you know, making a living and just jobs that come in, I usually just say, yep, no worries, I'll do that, and don't necessarily think about how creatively fulfilling it is. I just sort of take jobs for the, you know, just because I'm on that rat race. And luckily I work in a field where most of those jobs are very fulfilling, but it was nice to pause for a moment and just do something purely for creativity's sake.
So have you found that, that this whole thing has made you reassess photography and the kind of things you do with photography and the importance of creating that personal work?
I was taking some pictures the other day of musician friend of mine, Andy Bull, who I've worked with for many years. And I realized those photos were very kind of introspective and calm and kind of thoughtful. And that's not how my photos used to be. My photos used to be wild. And I think I used to, because I'm a very introverted, fairly quiet person, I felt like in my photos I went the other extreme and tried to capture people who were larger than life and outrageous and capture moments that were like that. And I still find that fulfilling. But what I've kind of noticed in recent years is that I've been okay with just having my photos reflect more of my own personality and let my subjects just be peaceful in the photos and calm and present, not necessarily having to have them do some outrageous concept. They can just be more themselves. And over time, that I think that reflects me better.
Mm. And I suppose all of this time that we have had to ourselves lately must only have amplified that process because there aren't wild things. Well, I mean, there are wild things happening in the world. But in terms of what you're photographing, there aren't the performances aren't there, and there aren't any big crowds going crazy. And it, I guess it forces you to think, well, I mean, life is still going on without those things. So, you know, my job as a photographer is it's to kind of interpret the world around you. And if there's no massive crowd going wild for a musician, then it doesn't mean stop taking photos.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, thanks for joining me, Dan. This has been a really great chat, and we've had several chats like this over the years, and it's great that we can always cover new ground and be inspired in different ways by the way that you see the world. I wanted to end with maybe some simple words of wisdom for anybody listening, because as we said before, you work with a whole ton of photographers who have varying skill sets. So I think you're especially well placed to kind of understand the challenges and the common hurdles that photographers or photographers face. Is there any kind of advice that you impart to the photographers you work with? Sorry, that turned into a big question.
It is a very broad one. I guess there's practical advice. Like, I think as a photographer, it's essentially you're running a business. If this is like a freelance photographer. So there is practical stuff about trying to train people to be good at quoting and managing their invoices and how much to quote and things like that. And I think those are all really challenging things and things that actually are really important for a successful photography career. But I'm also, we've talked about this so far, about photography to me is also a trade as much as an art. And so it's like, you know, I'm a problem solver. Like, a client comes to me with a problem and I solve it. Sometimes my solution is great art. Sometimes my solution is just practical. And I think there's value in both of those approaches. But yeah, I'm not sure what the nugget of advice in that is. But also, like I've also talked about, don't lose sight of what made you passionate about photography in the first place. Like, I never intended to make a living as a photographer. I just did it because I loved doing it and I couldn't imagine not doing it. So I think it's also important, if you find yourself in those moments where you might be falling out of love with photography, is to use that to reassess and refocus and perhaps start saying no to the things that are grinding you down and focus more on the things that that get you excited and make you love photography.
Well, thanks a lot for joining us. I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Jared.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you for listening to my chat with Daniel Bowd. If you would like to check out his work, there'll be links in the podcast description. See you next time.